Hello, fellow tech fans, and welcome back to the Gadget Show podcast. I'm Jason Bradbury.
And I'm Susie Perry, and this episode is bursting with gadgety goodness. But first, a big thank you to our sponsor, CEX.
Oh, yes. They're the go-to legends for buying, selling, and recycling tech. So fancy a phone upgrade, need a laptop for work, or just craving a retro console fix?
Yeah, you'll find brilliant pre-loved tech at CEX, properly tested and covered by a five-year warranty.
Take a look at webuy.com or pop into one of hundreds of CEX stores across the UK.
In this week's episode, ChatGPT takes on Google and Samsung's XR headset has finally landed.
So cool. I just can't believe the amount of stuff that changes episode to episode, Susie. It's nuts. But before we dive in, Susie, it looks like I think you're at home. Are you actually at home? You've been all over Asia for most of the last few episodes.
Yeah.
Are you in Blighty?
I'm back in the Midlands. I'm at my dad's house. I'm not quite in my own house yet because my internet providers are being a little bit weird and haven't got their act together. Well, it's Virgin I've chosen because that's who my dad uses and it's really good here. But they don't seem to have got their act together. Someone has
come
done
on,
something
Virgin.
And they can't do something else and I've got no bloody Wi-Fi.
Have you got a new office so that you can do the podcast from there?
At the moment, I've got an empty office. So I was hoping the next podcast that I could be bringing you, you know, my new home. But I'm not going to have any Wi-Fi by then.
I don't know, maybe if they're listening, Virgin, if you're listening, we need Sue's inner office next episode of the podcast. That's maybe a big ask. Anyway, over to you. What sort of tech has been catching your attention on your travels?
Yeah, anyway, it's nice to be home. I did like a little... I'm just going to throw this in here. I did a little recce in all the airports to see what iPhones were available to buy.
Yeah.
And there were none, apart from the Air. That was the only one that was available in all the countries that I went to. So it's quite mad. I will come back to that later on in the podcast and the slight annoyance that we have. But this week in tech, something pretty special, really, and interesting, I think, from Amazon. Mm-hmm. So they've revealed this prototype of AI-powered smart glasses. They're called Amelia, and they're designed specifically for delivery drivers, and this is what's important. So these glasses come with a built-in camera and display, and they pair with a little waistcoat, which is equipped with a button that drivers press to take photos of deliveries. You know, when they come to your house, they have to take a picture and everything. So unlike the smart glasses that we've seen that have been aimed at consumers, like those from Meta, for example, Amazon's version is strictly for the use of the last mile of delivery. So it helps drivers locate packages faster, photographs the proof of delivery thing. And the idea, I think, is to shave up to 30 minutes in an 8-hour to 10-hour shift by reducing repetitive steps. So I know they're probably going to squeeze more out of their drivers there, looking at the other side of it. The safety's kind of baked in there too. So the glasses can detect if they're in a moving vehicle and they shut off automatically. And there's also a manual hardware switch to disable sensors like camera and microphone if the driver wants to turn them off. So they're not being spied on per se. While right now it's purely a business use product. Well, you know what I'm like about privacy. Amazon hasn't ruled out making it available to consumers a bit further down the line. So, you know, basically this is something about wearable tech being very specific. It's not just about smartwatches and AR glasses for us everyday folk, but you know, also stuff is being designed specifically for jobs. So I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, on the upside, I'm thinking, wow, it's finally happening. Like there, you know, various manufacturers are rolling out, you know, specs that are smart, either give us mixed reality or some form of camera functionality and so on and so forth. This sounds like a really interesting user case scenario. But then on the downside, I too am concerned about privacy in an era where facial recognition is in the newspapers and, you know, the old brick card and all that sort of stuff. It does concern me somewhat that these, you know, workers are particularly vulnerable, aren't they? Because I can, you know, I can shout about the brick card as much as I want. It doesn't, it's not, no one's going to, you know, have a problem with me having an issue with it, right? But if I work for a company and I've got a problem with their technology, watching me, listening to me, making me more efficient when I actually want to just, you know, do my thing, that can reflect badly on me as an employee. So yeah, it's an interesting deployment.
What about you? What have you seen that's interested you?
I mean, I've done loads of cool things, but I think the thing that we need to talk about, Susie, the sort of tech elephant in the room, so to speak, is the reaction that we got from current listeners and viewers of the podcast and new listeners and viewers based on Apple dropping their chargerless MacBook on the M5 chipset this week. And that was, you know, that was a huge response. The main message from listeners and viewers was that certainly from my perspective, on balance, was that they were pleased that we were making that point. But there were listeners and viewers that were keen to point out that Apple is not supplying a charger because of an upcoming EU regulation to reduce e-waste. Now, I understand why people are making that distinction. Mm. The only thing is, I mean, we researched this exhaustively, and it doesn't appear to be as simple as that. The directive referenced, it mandates that many portable electronic devices sold in the EU must use a USB-C port for wired charging. And I agree with that, actually. I think it's a really good trend. I think it's great because I don't have to run around for five different designs of charger when I'm doing what I did this weekend, going off on a big trip with the family. I can just grab a couple of USB-C chargers. Supposedly, we'll get into the weeds on this a little bit, but basically, in essence, and you know, off I go. Specifically, from the 28th of December 2024, devices like mobile phones, tablets, digital cameras, headphones, e-readers, and similar will need to support USB-C charging, which is what all the latest smartphones have done. For laptops, it's a little bit different. The deadline is spring 2026. So Apple, to their credit, are ahead of this. They're getting ready for a 2026 directive, all right? Beyond the port standardization, which I think we'll agree is a good thing, the directive also allows, and in some cases expects, devices to be sold without a charger included, so consumers can reuse existing chargers rather than be forced to buy a new one. And that's where some listeners and viewers were obviously signaling, right? The regulation, however, and this is very important, does not force every product to exclude a charger entirely. Manufacturers can include a power charger if they choose, although the rules make the charger not included option permissible and sometimes preferable. If you buy a laptop in the EU sometime after spring 2026, the device should have USB-C wired charging compatibility if it uses wired charging under the new directive. So there you go, that's all the sort of stuff, right? The bottom line is, and this is my position on it, they could have included a charger. Okay, they could have done. What I can say is that part of the selling of this M5 chip MacBook Pro included reference to its fast charging. And in order to make use of that, you've got to get an additional charger. You've got to spend 59 or 79 quid for one of a couple of different wattage chargers. So I don't think it was done in good faith. So I'm really impressed by everyone's response, and some really good, well-informed commentary was received from people watching the various social media mini clips of this item and the main podcast itself across the platforms that we distribute it to. But my position hasn't changed. I still think they should have included it, and it still makes me mad. And I think it feels like someone's seizing an opportunity to sell you something at the same price, but you know, without a charger.
Yeah, 100%. That's the feedback I got. No, I also got a photographer friend of mine said they bought a Nikon earlier, who's a professional photographer. That didn't have a charger as well. Same reason behind it, same reasoning, same thought process. But if, you know, I feel like if you're not going to put a charger in, then you have to reduce the price so that you could afford to go and buy the charger. It's simple. You don't reduce the price in Europe and not in the UK, and now we're into an EU thing right there, so it's a quagmire and it's grey. But as a UK citizen as well, why are we having to pay more money when they're paying less in Europe?
It doesn't make any sense.
It's really weird. Well, it's an interesting situation, isn't it? Everywhere I went in Asia, you couldn't bloody get one of the phones because they'd sold out, apart from the Air. So clearly they're flying off the shelves, the phones. Laptops, I'm not quite sure about, but is this a PR disaster? Only time will tell.
Okay, now, if you can't get enough of us chatting tech, there's a whole other world waiting over on Patreon. Extra episodes, bonus clips, behind-the-scenes mischief, basically all the good stuff that didn't fit into the main show, and yes, it's the only place you can watch and listen completely ad-free.
Yeah, plus, Jason's just unleashed something very special.
Yes. To make that sound slightly smutty.
Well, it does sound smutty. I know it, but it isn't. It absolutely 100% is not, for a change.
By popular demand, there's now a full guided tour of my legendary gadget lockup. Every retro console, every weird gizmo. I think my BMX bike is in there. I don't remember. It's like stepping into the mind of a tech hoarder. In fact, it is stepping into the mind of a tech hoarder. But on video, exclusive only to Patreon.
You don't want to step into that kaleidoscopic mind, trust me. But if you'd like to support the show and unlock all of that brilliant bonus content, then you just have to head to patreon.com/thegadgetshow and join the crew, and we would love to have you in the gang.
So I've been trying out something completely new from the boffins at OpenAI. It's called ChatGPT Atlas, and it's their own internet browser. And what I'm excited about, the reason I wanted to get into this, Suze, is this points to what will be the next phase of AI, which is the agentic phase. So, you know, you give something agency, you give it the opportunity to do things on its own, a little bit like my teenager passing his driving test, for example. And then you sit as a parent worried to death that they're going to have an accident. This is similar. You give agency to your browser. Eventually, you'll give it your credit card. That's not what I did in my test. In fact, it'd be interesting to know if you can do that with Atlas just yet. And it can go off and do things like book your holiday. You can do sort of simple things like sort your train tickets out, you know? I mean, numerous times I've been off at the motorway and I've realized, oh my God, I haven't booked the train, you know, or I actually don't know where I'm going to stay tonight. And it would be really cool if you could just pull over and then just get your agentic AI butler to find you a hotel, 3 stars, somewhere in the middle of London, not too bothered for tonight. And it just go off and book it all for you. Do you know what I mean? That's what I mean by agency. So don't
think... Yeah, so it's like a PA sort of thing.
It's like a digital PA. Don't think Chrome or Safari. This thing wants you to actually talk your way around the web. This is another important part of this process, Susie. So for example, in that particular instance, it would be show me or find me hotels in Shoreditch, London, or in Birmingham, right? Or find me a new toaster for my mom. But a few minutes into testing, I personally started hitting quite a few walls. So some of the phrases that I hit when I was hitting the proverbial walls were messages limit reached. So that was interesting. Obviously using too much bandwidth, Suze. No available models support the tools in use was another phrase I got, which I thought was quite funny. I don't know what that means. And I know that a lot of users who, unlike me, aren't subscribers. I actually have a monthly subscription to OpenAI. Apparently, quite quickly, they got, you've hit the free plan limit for GPT-5. Which is interesting because it feels like I'm not saying this is a bad thing. They've got to have a business model, for God's sake. But it feels like the sort of computational power required to do this agentic stuff within a browser, like, you know, decode your voice message and then reply with some intelligent action, you know, actually costs quite a lot of money in terms of electricity. And so you very soon run out of good faith if you're not one of the subscribers. So, you know, we're getting to that sort of subscriber only service thing, which is interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting, isn't it? And I wonder if that's difficult to shift, because I don't subscribe, so I fall into that category of doing the odd bit of this and that. But I haven't bought into it yet.
I mean, here's the deal, right? At the moment, when I have to ring the HMRC or if I have to ring my bank, for example, it takes absolutely ages. Now, maybe that's me.
No, it's a pain in the arse. Stuff like that is a pain in the arse. But
inhuman process, like that sitting on a call for 40 minutes while some crap tune plays in your ear. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no. And then you'll pass from one person to another and you end up, you know, half the time not getting where you want to get to. Yeah. I understand the frustration of that. But things like, you know, booking a flight or a hotel, I don't care. I happily do that. myself. I don't need an assistant to do that for me. It wouldn't. Yeah. That's not enough weight for me to give away personal data. It just isn't. It really
okay,
isn't.
If you said, if you said right now that you've got a service where I can pay 50 quid and it will sort my potential ski holiday out for Christmas with me, my wife and my three kids, and sort it all out, like find it all out for me, offer me some options I can then choose, and they've got to be intelligent options that meet my needs, they're kind of bespoke to me, and then most importantly do all of the flight stuff and all of the check-in and all of the leg room and all of that nonsense, and all of the what is it called, not is it check-in, yeah, you know, the digital check-in thing, whatever it is, all of that stuff, which I absolutely hate. I would happily pay that money, happily. I'd do it tomorrow.
Wow, I wouldn't do it for free.
That's fascinating. Well, it seems that you're in good company, because right now only 5% of ChatGPT users pay for the premium versions. I was quite surprised to hear that. I thought I was part of the gang. It seems that I'm very much the minority.
You're part of the small gang. You're part of an elite gang. And
I don't know about, I don't know about elite. I think if they found out I was a member, they'd chuck me out. So OpenAI has a mountain to climb, is my point. If they want Atlas to take over the browser world, because that's really what they're talking about, Susa. They're talking about this, at the moment, it has to interact with other internet services. But eventually, really, what they're saying is the concept of the browser, or the search engine as we know it, is kind of... becoming out of date.
Yeah, so they're basically saying that, you know, in the future you won't be going on websites, you won't be doing the searching yourself, you'll have AI to do that for you.
Yeah.
Might be true. Only the future will tell.
Just to point out, folks, that if you want to experience OpenAI's GPT-5 browser, Atlas, then you do need to be on a Mac at the moment, but hopefully they'll be bringing it out for Android and iOS and Windows, and maybe even Linux, who knows?
Time for a quick pit stop now to shout out to our amazing sponsor, CEX.
Yeah, if you're hunting for tech that won't destroy your bank balance, then this is the place. Phones, laptops, cameras, consoles, all pre-loved, all properly tested.
Need a laptop for school or for work? You could trade in your old one and walk out with a powerful gaming laptop for £500. Boom, job done.
Sounds like you're talking from personal experience there, Suze. Anyway, and the five-year warranty, that really sets them apart. No mystery sellers, no dodgy surprises.
Yeah, just head to webuy.com or visit one of their stores nationwide and see what you can unlock. Now then, if you were listening or watching last week, you'll remember that we were chatting about those supposed leaks of Samsung's new XR headset. Well, it turns out that they were pretty bang on. And even more impressively, Jason's prediction of the price was also nailed on. So the Galaxy XR is Samsung's big leap into mixed reality with a proper premium headset designed to take on the big players. Here's a little rundown of what you're getting then. So a powerful Snapdragon XR2 Plus Gen 2 chip under the hood, 16 gig of RAM for all of that AI-powered multitasking, sharp micro OLED displays around 3,552x3,840 resolution per eye, and up to 90 hertz refresh rate for crisp visuals. Full inside-out tracking, hand tracking, eye tracking, and voice gesture control, so you can ditch the controllers entirely in many apps. Wi-Fi 7 and Bluetooth 5.4 connectivity running the new Android XR platform. Around 2 to 2.5 hours of battery life, and the battery pack is separate to keep the headset lighter on your face. And the good and bad news is that it's available now in the States. And you've guessed it, the bad news is it's a TBC for the good old UK. The price is around $1,799, offers a very attractive option over the Vision Pro. What do you think? Yes.
So it is a Vision Pro killer, maybe? It ought to be. I mean,
it's an
Samsung
alternative, isn't it?
Yeah, they ought to be able to shift, a lot more units than the Vision Pro. This could be interesting because, as you know, we keep heralding the arrival of mixed reality, don't we? And the kind of mass adoption of those sorts of devices. And we never quite get there. It just feels like we're limping confidently towards that future. And this, this is yet another opportunity to make that reality
you
happen.
You so want it to work, don't you?
I really do.
We're limping, but in a confident way.
Yeah. I mean, that resolution is right up there, isn't it? Yeah. 90 hertz, not bad. It's not the 120 hertz that we talked about with the Vision Pro refresh with the M5 chip, but it's damn good.
It's so frustrating, though, isn't it? That it's not available in the UK yet. It's just so second rate, it feels like, at the moment, doesn't it?
I know.
It's such a neighbour, but like down the road a bit. Oh, yeah, that kind of boy. Oh, yeah. It's just, we'll get there in the end, down there. Okay, folks. Now, before we go, let's play another game because, you know, we're 12. You may recall that we did blind rankings the other week. Well, this week we're filling in the blanks, so it's a little bit different. Right, so just to summarise, I'm after the best-selling top 10 consoles.
Okay, right.
Okay?
Yeah. Xbox 360, definitely on the list.
Yep, you're correct. It's on the list.
What number?
It's number 9.
I know that was a tricky one, that's why I went first.
Yep, with 84 million.
Okay, first-generation PlayStation.
Well, PlayStation, original, 1994, 102.49 million
okay.
sales,
yeah.
goes
yeah.
in at number 6.
All right, cool. PlayStation 2. 3.
Goes in at number 1.
Ah, hey! Not bad.
160.63 million. Obviously came out in the year 2000.
Did it really? That's when I met my wife. I was surprised that she... was interested because I spent so much time on PlayStation 2.
I'm surprised she's still interested now.
Thank you. Game Boy. Original Game Boy.
Game Boy Original. So Game Boy and Game Boy Color with 118.69 million sales. That's combined. That goes in at number 4.
The Wii was very popular. The Wii. I'm going to go for a Wii.
The Wii, 2006, it's number 7 with 101.63 million sales.
So it's number 10 is going to be tricky. Number 8 and number 10. I've got 5 left, right?
You have.
N64.
Not on the list.
No. Really?
Mm-hmm.
Mega Drive.
Not on the list.
No.
I know.
PS4 would be more. Yeah, I'm going with PS4, yeah.
Okay, yep, that's good.
On there.
That's 5th. 2013, that was released, and 117.2 million sales.
I just wouldn't have thought it'd be on there, but the Switch.
The Switch is on there.
Wow. What sort of... how many?
It's in at number 3.
Wow.
2017, it was released. 153.1 million.
Super Nintendo.
Not on the list.
No! What?!
So there's another Nintendo on the list.
Not the DS.
Yeah, the DS.
Really?
Number 2.
God.
Released in 2004, sales 154.02 million. So, yeah, 2 more to go.
I need a break. This is hard work.
You can't have one.
Give me a clue.
So it's a dominant manufacturer, very dominant, that will love this list. They've already got 3 in there and they've got 2 more.
PlayStation 3.
Yes.
Correct. Yay! Thank God!
Came out in 2006, sold 87.4 million. Right, come on, you've got 9 out of 10. What's number 10?
Okay. Oh, it can't be the PlayStation 5.
It can be!
Yay!
80 million sales. That's your 10.
God, that was hard. Much, much harder and really surprising. Wow!
Sony dominance there. What have you got for me? And okay. Bear in mind, I'm really jet lagged.
Oh, my God. I feel bad because I don't know. I would... Look, good luck is all I'm going to say, all right? What I want is 10 websites from you, the top 10 most visited websites of all time. I've got a list in front of me, and all you've got to do is name the website, all right? And I'll tell you whether it makes the list.
Of all time and globally?
Yes.
Okay, Google.
Straight in at number 1, Susie. Well done. Brilliant.
Can I go... Oh, I am home.
1998 was when it was founded, 27 years ago. Estimated average monthly visits, not that many, only 90 billion a month. My God. Rough lifetime visits, between 15 and 18 trillion visits. Oh my gosh, that is absolutely incredible. So anyway, other ones.
Facebook?
Is number 3, well done. Established in 2004, average monthly visits, wow. 10 billion. I wonder if that's averaged over the last year. because I would imagine it would be on the downturn. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. But in its lifetime, 2 to 3 trillion lifetime visits. That's absolutely amazing. Okay, another website, please.
Bad. I've had Facebook, YouTube. YouTube.
You haven't had YouTube, but you have now. In at number two, it's YouTube. Founded in 2005, just about when we started our show-ish, 20 years ago, can expect between 45 and 50 billion visits per month. Over 2.7 billion active users. 1 billion hours watched per day, Susie, per day. Incredible. Hey, you are absolutely brilliant at this. Can you try another one?
Instagram.
Instagram is another strike on the dartboard. Position number 6. Okay, next one.
Twitter, then, or X, yep. Whatever.
Number 7. You're incredible accuracy. Now, so you've got the set. I'll give you a summary of what you've got so far in a minute. Okay. But Twitter, or X, founded in 2006, so 19 years of age. 6 billion average monthly visitors. The peak usage for what was then Twitter was in the mid-2010s.
And it was nice. Wikipedia?
Yes, Wikipedia!
Oh,
number 5!
Nice. Gosh,
you're doing so well. The year 2001 saw the founding of Wikipedia, so one of our oldest, 24 years of age, 6 billion visitors per month, one of the world's most consistent sort of global reference sites. Incredible stuff. Well done. Let me just sum up where you are. You've got Google at number 1, you've got YouTube at number 2, you've got Facebook at number 3. You don't know what number 4 is just yet. You've got Wikipedia at number 5, you said Instagram at number 6, and Twitter at number 7. So you've got to fill spaces 10, 9, 8, and 4.
We've talked about them today, so what about Amazon? Is that in there?
Amazon is in there. You're doing so well. In slot number 8, I think it may well be our oldest website, having been around for a staggering 30 years, founded in 1995. It's still can expect 3 billion visitors per month. It gets seasonal spikes, of course, around Christmas. Yes.
Okay, a bit of a dark... Yahoo, maybe?
Yeah, Yahoo, number 9.
Is it?
Incredible. 1995 again, it's as old as Amazon, which I didn't know. Gets 1 billion monthly visitors, and it was once the biggest site on Earth. That's pre-Google. Remember, we used to Yahoo. It never became a verb. Maybe that's why it's smaller than Google. Because we Google things, don't we? We don't Yahoo things, but I remember Yahoo being... I remember Ask Jeeves being a thing as well.
Oh, yeah?
That's not on there, in case you're wondering.
Okay, thank you for that massive clue. Is Reddit on there?
That's a really, really good suggestion. The answer is no.
Okay.
No, the answer is no. But I love that you came up with that. I think that's a very logical question, because it could be one of those things, couldn't it? So think globally. Think right outside the box. I'm going to give you a clue. Mm. They often talk about the extraordinary speed with which people signed up to this.
ChatGPT?
Yes, it is.
Are you joking?
No, incredible. In position number 10.
No way.
Founded in just 2022. Okay, so it's only 3 years old. It gets 2 billion visitors per month. Its growth has been described as explosive and one of the fastest rising sites ever launched.
Unbelievable.
That's incredible.
Okay, yeah. But I still haven't got number bloody 4.
So the figures, I mean, what I should have been doing is keeping track of what they call the rough lifetime visits, which is, you know, how these things are ranked.
Yeah.
And even in its you know, infancy of 3 years, it's had 70 to 80 billion lifetime visits. I mean, that's incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Right, so I'm missing number 4.
Tell you what, if you want, if you can name the country that this is from.
Is it in India?
No.
Is it China?
Yes, it is. Do you know any Chinese search engines?
Is it a search engine called XU? Or something like that?
No.
Okay, I don't think I know it then.
Susie, I'm going to put you out of your misery. You did really, really well, though. Incredibly well, by the way. What an incredible performance. But the one you're missing is at number 4. It's got 8 billion users per month, 2 trillion over its lifetime. It is China's default search engine, and it dominates what I think we both know is a massive domestic market. Founded in the year 2000, it's Baidu. Baidu is the fourth most visited website of all time. Absolutely amazing. Well done. And that's it. Another episode of the Gadget Show podcast wrapped. Thank you so much for CX for powering us, keeping us fueled with tech goodness every week.
Yeah, whether you're craving something shiny and brand new or hunting down a glorious retro relic, CEX is where you belong.
But before we disappear into a pile of tangled cables, we've got some absolute legends to thank, our brilliant Patreon supporters. So, a huge gadget thanks to Dave Green, Ren Mandagorn, such a great name, Dave McHugh, Matthew Riley, Dean Day, Chris Cool, Stephen Green, Tall Man with Glasses, Andrew Bamford, and Duncan Bell.
And also Colin Jones, Gordon Packer, Richard Martin, Simon Ryland, Philip Eddington, Richard Wykes, and Danny Rushton. Thank you so much. You are all superstars.
Absolutely. Want your name in there too? Well, hop onto Patreon. You'll get bonus episodes, behind the scenes chaos, which I can tell you has definitely been the theme for this week's episode. And of course, the ad-free version of the show.
Just head to patreon.com/thegadgetshow. Very quick, simple and sorted. Come over and join the fun. And don't forget our Q&A special inbox edition drops later on this week. See you then.
See you next time.
The Gadget Show podcast with Jason and Susie was presented by Jason Bradbury and Susie Perry off the telly. It was produced by Ewan Keel and Tom Clint and is a North One production.